A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, guys, happy to again talk about something that Russ and I got to know, an organization we got to know, and actually Russ's family has had some involvement with, talking about the National Ability Center up in Park City. And from time to time when they've got events, we always like to be able to highlight them and hopefully give some of our listeners an idea of how to go to participate, even if it's just as a volunteer. And there's another one coming up in the next week or so. It's February 4th through 6th, the 31st annual Huntsman Cup World Para Alpine Ski Races, which Sarah agrees is a mouthful. And Sarah is Sarah Beaudry-Wiltsey. She's the competition program manager at the NAC. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
31 years this has been going on, huh?
Yeah, it's impressive, right? We threw a big shindig last year for the 30th year, and here we are at 31.
Yeah. Before we get too far into the Huntsman Cup, we always like to sort of reset things about what the National Ability Center is all about. And I guess it started as a way of helping military veterans, or maybe the military veterans came later, but helping people with what they thought were disabilities become can-do abilities and get them back out doing great outdoor things like riding bikes and skiing, etc.
You're correct. Yeah, we actually did start teaching veterans how to ski at Park City Mountain back in the 80s. And it has now grown to be an organization that helps people of all abilities participate in recreational activities, everything from whitewater rafting and rock climbing to ski, snowboard, ice hockey, and everything in the recreational world.
I always have to back up a little bit when I use the word disability, because that's a big no-no around your offices.
We people do have disabilities, but we like to say people with different abilities. Yeah, everybody is capable of doing something, and we show that at the National Ability Center. We work with people of all abilities to be able to recreate in ways that they would like to, and there's a lot of miracles that happen up there.
There really are, and it's not just physical abilities. I mean, right down to things like autism. I mentioned Russ Smith has had his grandkids up there to be involved in a couple of the programs. There are lots of ways that people can get help, even beyond physical needs.
Absolutely, absolutely. Our participants are pretty much split 30% across the board. 30% of people of our participants have physical disabilities. Another 30% are veterans and military, like we already discussed. And then the remaining 30-ish percent are people with cognitive or developmental disabilities. So, yeah, we have something for everybody.
One of the things Russ and I have had the privilege, really, of participating in 4 or 5 years now is this luncheon that you do every year. And we always come away so inspired with the stories, but realizing the reach of this fantastic organization, not just here in Utah or around the U.S., but around the world.
Yeah, it's fabulous. It's very impressive. Obviously for our competition program during Paralympic years, that reaches global. But even on a yearly basis, we have participants worldwide that come to the National Ability Center. We also are really big on spreading education and helping other organizations around the world be able to provide opportunities for people with disabilities as well. We currently have 6 Korean interns with us that are learning how we do things at the NAC to be able to take these skills and this knowledge home to their organizations back in Korea. So, yeah, we really do focus on global impact.
So the 2020 Olympic Games are going to be in Tokyo, if I have that right. Those will be the summer games. But then 2022 Winter Games come back around, and I guess that means Paralympic time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Paralympic Games right alongside with Olympic Games. Yep.
All right. And the Huntsman Cup, which we are talking about today, is sort of one of those programs that keeps these para-athletes in condition and in competition so that they can prepare themselves for such a worldwide event?
Absolutely. I mean, preparing for the Paralympic Games is absolutely a constant process. It does have a little bit of a four-year cyclical nature, but it definitely still happens, you know, in between those games. So we currently have hopefully a little over 30 athletes that will be competing in the Huntsman Cup this year, and they are earning points and getting noticed and, you know, striving to make that U.S. team, and actually the U.S. team will be at the Huntsman Cup this year, and being able to compete against other athletes and really stay on top of their game and constantly having their eyes set on those next Paralympic Games.
I mentioned the dates of February 4th through the 6th, so let's run through some of these events that are going to be taking place. And we should say, by the way, that this is sponsored by Park City Mountain Resort and Vail Epic Promise. I know they have jumped in big time to be a part of this, too.
Yeah, absolutely. We could not do it without them. They host us on their mountain, which is a fabulous venue for this, and we couldn't host this event without them. So we are incredibly grateful for Vail and the Epic Promise grant that allows us to do this.
Here's the other thing I will warn anybody. First of all, you want to be inspired. You want to go hear these stories, and you want to see the abilities of these great people, these great athletes that are out there. It'll make you feel bad that you ever complained about not being able, you know, you stubbed your toe or something and you didn't, you know, feel good in your ski boots, so you didn't go skiing that day. These people overcome so much, and they do more on snow than I can do at my age with years of experience on two boards.
It's really incredible what these athletes can do. They can absolutely rip, and seeing them compete in this venue showcases that. I love to tell a story about actually a fundraiser where one of our athletes was skiing with a group of able-bodied people, and somebody asked, they said, why is he here? And we said, he's one of our athletes. And they said, what disability does he have? And because he was a stand-up skier, they didn't realize that he's an amputee and was skiing on a prosthetic. But he'd been smoking them all day long. So, these athletes are incredibly impressive, and it's fabulous to see what they're doing out there.
Yeah, and for those of you that think, these must be specially designed events for some of these athletes, think again. We're talking about a Super G race that'll be scheduled on February 4th, followed by slalom racing that'll be happening on the 5th and 6th. I would dare most of our listening audience to go out there and try and run these gates.
Do so after you're well conditioned and you have a good insurance plan. These are incredibly hard races, and it's, like I said, it's incredibly impressive to see what they're doing. That Super G race on the first day, there's actually two Super G races on the fourth, back to back, and that's an impressive run. It definitely takes a lot of skill and technical ability.
You mentioned there were going to be how many adaptive athletes? 30, you said?
30 or a little bit more. Yeah, quite a good crew.
But look at the countries represented: Kenya, Chile, Australia, Great Britain, Japan, and then, of course, here in the U.S. And there's an annual awards program that I think was introduced at last year's event, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we honor people that have made a significant contribution to para-alpine ski racing. It's definitely an organization that requires a lot of passion and support to keep going, and there's a lot of really passionate people involved in. And we're grateful for that and all that they're doing to forward the sport. So we're honored to be able to honor them and thank them for what they've done.
A big part of this, and I mean a big part of this, is the volunteer effort. And I know that's something that you're really in charge of, sort of wrangling folks out there that want to just come and be a part of this.
Yeah, absolutely. The National Ability Center is, I like to say, is built on the foundation of volunteers, and we couldn't do what we do without them. Thousands and thousands of volunteer hours every year. We have dozens of volunteers that help support this race every day, and are always looking for more. So if anybody wants to come on out, they don't have to volunteer. They can absolutely, you know, swing by the finish corral and cheer and hoop and holler. But if they want to get more involved, we're always looking for volunteers for this race, everything from hand timing to gate judging to, you know, helping out in the team room. So
yeah,
lots of ways to get involved.
I was looking at some of the tasks, like bib collectors, hand timers, cheering section. You can go up and be a part of just about anything, and all will be welcome. This is a good community to be looking for that help. I remember back in 2002 during the Olympics, the thousands of people that showed up to be a part of that experience.
Yeah, it's incredible to see how the community really rallies and supports us. You know, it's, again, I always say that Park City has our back time and time again, and we're really grateful for that. And it's always fun to come out and cheer, right? So come on out to Huntsman Cup. We'd love to see everybody.
It's February 4th, 5th, and 6th, so coming right up here. And I guess the best thing for them to do is to go to your website, which is discovernac.org. Don't do what I did and plug in .com there. You're going to end up with a site that is soon to be arriving. It's discovernac.org. Is there a link somewhere there for volunteers?
Yeah. So you can also link straight to the Huntsman Cup page off of that website, discovernac.org. And there's a full list of volunteers still needed for the event. And it's an easy way to get involved.
All right. I would encourage anybody to go and be a part of this. It really is inspiring, and you're going to come away feeling a better person for going and watching these great people. They'll inspire you to do things even you didn't think you could do someday. Discovernac.org, and if you put the /in there and go Huntsman-Cup, you'll get information. And, Sarah, we appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, we're going to take a quick break in the program. When we come back, Navi's going to help us out with some fish bites information, so stay right there.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
Well, let me tell you a story about a little fella. Black and blue with a hint of yellow. The bluegill boogie. Yeah, the bluegill boogie. When the bass ain't biting and the trout are gone, try the bluegill boogie.
All right, let's get some fish bites in here. And a reminder, ABC News at the top of the hour. And on the other side, we're talking youth hunter education in the state. And look forward to sharing it with you. Before you jump in with what you had for us, Navi, I just want to read this out of Flagstaff, Arizona, about an endangered fish found in the Colorado River Basin is on the upswing. We're talking about the humpback chub.
Oh, yeah.
They're talking about declassifying it, I guess, right now. They said the fish gets its name from the fleshy bump behind its head, and sometimes when we hear about saving fish like the humpback chub, we get some pushback from people about, you know, why are we worrying about saving these guys? They were listed endangered in the late 60s, and its numbers had fallen dramatically before stabilizing more than a decade ago. But they said the largest population now found in the Grand Canyon, 4 smaller wild populations upstream of Lake Powell in Utah and the Colorado Canyons. And so the Fish and Wildlife Service said the fish no longer is on the brink of extinction and is better suited as threatened instead of endangered.
I agree with that.
Yeah. But you've always been in favor of keeping an eye on those kinds of things because it has the ability of setting off ecosystems if you're not mindful of it.
Yeah, it's the canary in the coal mine. It's basically telling us where we are as far as the health of everything. And we just watch those species, and if they're in trouble, we are next. So
yeah,
it's a safe way to do it.
Yeah. You wanted to talk whitefish today, though, right?
Yeah. This is the most maligned fish. I guess you could argue that the humpback chub was, too. But this one is a blast. Don't underestimate whitefish. One time I was on the Weber River, and this gentleman had, I'm not going to call him a gentleman, but this guy had a whitefish, and he punted it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I go, what are you doing? I thought that was ridiculous. And he says, they're trash fish. And I go, trash fish? What does that mean? They eat garbage? You know? Look, the whitefish are very, very beneficial to everybody. Yeah. not only are a blast to catch, which I'm going to get to in a moment, they are actually important to the ecosystem, and they're the reason why the brown trout in our Weber River actually puts weight on in the wintertime.
From the roe.
Right, from the roe. There's so much roe. I mean, these whitefish, they have been here since Lake Bonneville receded. So evolutionarily speaking, they have developed the ability to thwart drought. You have to understand how many years there was no water left in the Weber River because there was no dams way, way back. And so they learn to spawn in the deepest part of a river, which is essentially a puddle in the middle of the winter. So they shoot so many eggs in hopes that two make it, and they have. You know, my friend, one of my old friends from way, way back called them God's fish because he says that's who put them here. But they are absolutely wonderful fish. Like I say, they're benefits to the brown, to everything else. That's why our rivers are so healthy. But more importantly, they're a blast to catch. And I said last week, if you were listening, that they have shoulders, which is fly fishing vernacular for they're strong.
Yep,
and yes,
strong.
I said last week, too, that whitefish can't jump. But the truth is, they're so much fun to catch, and they're spawning. In fly fishing or in fishing, we say they're running. So they're in the run right now. They start up like this week, and they'll go until almost the end of February. And it's the best time to catch them. And their favorite food is hare's ears, or basically nymphs. Now, the whitefish, they'll eat the roe as well, but the browns like the roe. They like the nymphs, little hare's ear patterns. That's literally their favorite. They also like freshwater shrimp. They like it pink, and they like it gray. Now, the gray ones, which they're also sow bugs, are live, and the pink ones are dead. When you take a shrimp and throw it in the pan, it turns pink. That means it's dead. And people say, why do they like the pink ones? Because they don't run away. But that's great forage for those fish.
Well,
and in turn, because they eat so much freshwater crustacean, their meat is wonderful. These are the best-eaten fish in the state of Utah. And I did dabble a little bit in that last week. But you need to be careful about how many you eat because they, too, carry the mercury problems that we have.
Yeah.
But they are delicious. You want to eat these over a trout every time.
When they're in the spawn, real quick, because we're almost out of time, do you fish them any differently?
No, but just know you go after them. I mean, you target them, and they school up. And then if you drift through them and you don't get a strike, which you will, the brown's going to hit it because the browns are behind them waiting for the roe to get down to them.
Ah,
so this is one of the best times to go fishing, period.
All right. Real quick, it's the best time to be talking. Oh,
go.
You want to get a plug in here?
I wanted to say whitefish lives matter.
Okay. Now you've got that done. Navi, do you want to get a plug in for your class?
Yeah, we start next week. I've got a handful of seats still available in both the Tuesday and the Wednesday. Wildtrouts.com. We'll be targeting those fish because they'll be there when we're fishing.
All right. Don't get yourself arrested chasing any celebrities up there, all right?
No, I won't. I mean, it's actually pretty fun, and they're very, very delightful people, and they just love our state, and they think it's beautiful, and they're right.
All right, buddy. Have a great weekend.
Hey, thanks. Come on up and ski with me.
Yes. And, Russ, as we head into the next hour, get a little plug-in for your Sky Call, too.
Just give us a call. You need a satellite phone. We're not too busy right now. I'm just hanging out, waiting for your call. SkyCallSatellite.com, 801-450-8317.
ABC News is coming up next. Today's the day that the president's team gets their first chance to defend the president in the impeachment trial, so we'll have more on that coming up here on KSL. The Greenhouse Show is also coming up, of course, at 8 this morning. Don't go away.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.